Hi, and welcome to the Rachel Sellers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing free education about all things mental health. This podcast is about ending the mental health stigma and helping people cultivate a deeper awareness and understanding of themselves. Mental health education matters, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned and what I know. I'm your host, Rachel, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back to part two of the episode on trauma and eating disorders. There's been a little bit of a delay between part one and this episode. And if you don't follow me on Instagram, you might not know that we got a puppy a couple of months ago. So we have a 5-month-old golden retriever at home, and it has made working from home a little bit complicated. And he has been the best joy and such an incredible addition to our lives. And we've just had to kind of pivot, and things have taken a back burner. And I am excited to finally be able to record this episode and get it out to the world. So, like I said, today is a part two. So if you haven't listened to the first episode or the one before this about trauma and eating disorders, go ahead and listen to that and then come back to this one. Today, we're going to be talking about the intersection between trauma and eating disorders and talking more about specifically about two mediators. Remember, a mediator is a research term, and mediators just mean the thing that explains the relationship between two things. So in this case, trauma and eating disorders. Another way to say this is that a mediator gives a reason for why a relationship exists. And it's really important to understand these mediators, especially as it comes to understanding the intersection between trauma and eating disorders. Okay, so we're going to be talking about dissociation. Dissociation is the first mediator that I'm going to explain and talk about. And what dissociation is emotional and physical numbing. Think of it as extreme, or not even extreme, but just disconnection from the body. Dissociation is a survival response. It's a defense mechanism. It is a really helpful defense mechanism for when we are in the face of severe and life-threatening danger. If you've listened to any of my episodes on the polyvagal theory, you'll know that dissociation is kind of the hallmark of our nervous system's dorsal vagal state. This is the state, our nervous system's state, that is activated when our bodies are sensing danger in the environment or when our bodies just feel like they cannot cope. So dissociation is really common when we are struggling with depression. If past trauma isn't processed or it still is stuck in the body, or if the trauma is repetitive and persistent, like someone is still experiencing repeated episodes of abuse or neglect, what the body does, because our bodies work so brilliantly in service of our protection, the body can stay stuck in this state of dissociation in order to keep the body safe. In other words, this is kind of how the body achieves a felt sense of safety. And this feels really safe because dissociation is a way of being able to distance the self from the painful physical sensations and emotions and thoughts and memories that are related to the trauma. So what does this have to do with eating disorders? What's really common is that people struggling with an eating disorder use disordered eating behaviors as a way of dissociating or cutting themselves off from their bodies and their emotions. So because of trauma, often eating disorders manifest as an unconscious attempt to regain control or be invisible or numb the pain or avoid reality. And so really what we see is that eating disorders are really creative means of avoidance from feeling hard things. Think about it this way. If life circumstances, experiences feel intolerable, it makes sense that we as humans, we have to figure out what to do with all of those painful emotions. Hard emotions related to trauma, they don't just go away. They just get displaced and they get stuck in the body. And if we're not coping in a healthy way, then we're going to turn to unhelpful ways of coping, and that those emotions are going to kind of start coming out sideways. I see this a lot. I see dissociation a lot. And for people who are using food paired with overexercise, using restricting food paired with overexercise. And what we see about food restriction and exercise addiction or obsession is that the behaviors themselves help to regulate uncomfortable emotions or memories because they help to distance oneself and disconnect from hard and painful things. Another way to think about that is how the eating disorder behaviors often serve as a distraction from other hard things that are going on in a person's life. So a common narrative or story that I hear is if I'm constantly thinking about food due to food restriction and I'm obsessed with exercise, like when and where and how I'm going to fit exercise in, then I don't have space to think about my pain. And this isn't conscious. No one chooses these behaviors and says, I'm going to use eating disorder behaviors as a way to numb out from my difficult emotions that I've never learned to tolerate. This happens on an unconscious level. Food restriction also slows down cognitive functioning and it dulls physical sensations too. And so I see that a lot with people who are restricting do it, again, unconsciously as a way to distance themselves from the physical sensations and their embodied emotions. So people suffering from bulimia also struggle with dissociation. It's not just people who struggle with restrictive eating disorders. And this kind of distancing, what we see with bulimia is that it's often, dissociation is often needed in order to tolerate the uncomfortable sensations that come up with vomiting and purging, as well as some of the emotions that come up based on maybe food that was eaten, emotions like guilt and shame or disgust. What we know about vomiting over time is that it also releases opiates and endorphins, which can also distance a person from themselves by numbing out their pain. People suffering from binge eating disorder also use binging behaviors for the purposes of dissociation. This allows for a momentary kind of feeling of escape, again, from painful emotions and traumatic memories. So again, that the theme with dissociation and how it functions with eating disorders is that numbing, distancing, distracting function. So I mentioned this before, but here's kind of the cool thing about dissociation. It's cool because our bodies can protect us in this way. Like our bodies were biologically designed to be able to dissociate when we need them to, when we are really in a life-threatening, dangerous situation. What is unhelpful and what's not cool is that when the body keeps initiating this dissociative response long after a threat or threats have passed. And I see this a lot. I see this a ton in clients. And I've struggled with this myself, with my body dissociating specifically in the face of conflict because of past experiences with conflict that didn't feel safe for me. And so sometimes even if I am in, let's say, an argument with my partner who consciously I know he is a really safe person and I can safely have conflict with him, my body sometimes forgets that and will, if conflict gets like heated or really tense, my body will sometimes initiate this dissociative response. And I don't necessarily choose this. It's a part of how my nervous systems function, how your nervous system functions, how my nervous system functions when I don't feel safe. And so I say that to say we all dissociate. We all struggle with dissociation in some way because it's a part of our biology and it's a part of a biology that's supposed to keep us safe, right? And people struggling with eating disorders often use their eating disorder behaviors kind of as the means of disconnecting and dissociating from their bodies and their lives. And a quick note, and I kind of mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, We have to remember that oftentimes dissociation is not a conscious choice. We don't wake up and say, today I'm going to restrict my food intake as a way to distance myself from difficult, painful emotions related to my trauma. It doesn't happen within conscious thought. This happens in a very different part of the brain, and it does not happen on a conscious, kind of logical, linear thinking realm. This happens more in the part of the brain that's responsible for dealing with emotions, and that part of the brain doesn't really give like 2 cents about logic. So I think that's just important to kind of remember that this isn't necessarily always conscious, and people who are struggling with their eating disorders often don't realize until they are in recovery around how the eating disorders has functioned as this form of distancing in their lives. Okay, so on to kind of our last mediator, which is attachment. And eating disorders can be oftentimes like an attachment figure. And this is especially common for those who have experienced relational trauma, which is basically every single one of us, because we are humans and trauma is part of the human experience. And much of what we know about trauma is that it happens in the context of relationships. So let me talk about attachment for a second. We were created biologically to attach and to be in healthy relationships. We see this with babies. I mean, a mother is pretty much responsible for growing her baby's brain. And there's nuance there, but pretty much she's responsible for growing her baby's brain, okay? So we know, we see from the way that infants grow that we were so much created to attach. We are social beings. And healthy relationships are crucial from healing from trauma. We cannot heal from trauma in isolation. But here's the catch. Trauma often hijacks our ability to experience safety and connection in our own bodies and with other people. So oftentimes the thing that we need most in order to heal, that is healthy relationships, is often the thing that is absolutely terrifying for us, especially if we have been harmed in the past by relationships and by other people. So instead of someone that is struggling with an eating disorder, instead of relying on attaching to humans or relationships, people struggling with an eating disorder often attach to food or eating disorder behaviors as a means of feeling connected and safe. So think about it this way. The eating disorder itself kind of becomes like a surrogate parent. It offers safety and connection and belonging. Since symptoms of eating disorders often reflect relational difficulties, like I said before, a really big part of recovery is learning to reach out to people for support instead of relying on eating disorder behaviors. So, wow. We concluded the main conversation here about the mediators between trauma and eating disorders. And I want to kind of recap the four that we talked about between this episode and then the episode before. So really the four main mediators that explain this relationship between trauma and eating disorders is the way that eating disorders function as a way of coping with our emotion and our nervous system dysregulation and our need for safety. Eating disorders function as a way to gain power and control. And what we talked about today, eating disorders often serve as a function or a means of dissociating from hard and painful emotions. And we also see that eating disorders can serve as an attachment figure as well. So I hope that really helps kind of unpack a little bit more about what is this connection between trauma and eating disorders? Because I think it's a really important connection that we need to understand and we need to talk more about. So I kind of want to just kind of conclude by talking about how a big common thread between all of these mediators that we've talked about is how eating disorder behaviors function as a way of meeting very real human needs. I wonder if you've noticed that as you've been listening. I've talked a lot about needs and how eating disorder meets these core needs throughout this episode and the previous episode. Needs for power and control, autonomy, love, safety, belonging. And I think because of the way that eating disorders work to meet these very real needs, what we see is that eating disorders work in the sense that they do exactly what they're supposed to do in order to provide feelings of safety to the person who's suffering and to help relieve these persistent and overwhelming feelings of anxiety and fear. And this is why eating disorders are so hard to recover from. And it's also why people who have beat their eating disorders are some of the strongest and most badass people that I know. It takes so much courage and it takes so much bravery to stop engaging in these behaviors and learn to get needs met in a more healthy, adaptive way that is going to contribute to health and flourishing just as a person. So I think then, you know, part of the healing process is really helping clients become conscious of the way that their eating disorder behaviors are meeting these needs and how that's connected to trauma, because trauma robs us of being able to meet so many of our deeply, deeply desired needs in a healthy way. So this is a huge part of recovery, and it's something that I talk a lot about with my clients. So I hope that this episode has helped you understand the relationship between trauma and eating disorders. I'm going to do a whole season on the podcast actually dedicated to trauma. So if you have a lot of questions that have come up around trauma, that makes so much sense. It's really kind of misunderstood, I think, and I am hoping to unpack that as we move into other seasons of the podcast. But we're going to continue this season really honing in on eating disorders. And the next episode is going to be all about what diet culture is. And gosh, I say this every time that I'm so excited about this episode, but I'm really super pumped to be able to provide some education about what diet culture is and how it is harmful. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you learned something new. Just a reminder that this podcast is about mental health and mental health concepts, and education about psychology and therapy is not a substitute for individual therapy. If you want to help this podcast grow and get it into the hands of other listeners, please subscribe, rate, or leave me a review. It really does make a difference.